a Welcome to the Walk On podcast. In this episode, we're going to look at two disciples, two betrayals, and two drastically different legacies. What can we learn about the grace of God by looking at the stories of Judas and Peter? A few weeks ago, in a conversation over lunch, my friend brought up some questions and thoughts about Judas Iscariot, the disciple that betrayed Jesus. And I have to admit, even though Judas plays a key role in the events leading to the crucifixion, in my mind, I often just kind of viewed him as a background character. And when I did think of him, I thought of him in a very negative way. I mean, I think history looks at Judas as one of its most famous traitors. His name's synonymous with betrayal and backstabbing. And it's easy to see Judas as irredeemably evil. But was he? As my friend and I conversed and looked through scripture, we discovered a different side to Judas. Undeniably tragic, yes. Irredeemably evil? I'm not so sure. So who was Judas? Judas Iscariot was one of the 12 disciples of Jesus. He was invited by Jesus to be his disciple, to follow him and learn from him. And like the other disciples, Judas learned from Jesus, traveled with him, witnessed his miracles. He served others, did ministry together. We're told in scripture that Judas was put in charge of the money bag, the treasury of the disciples. We're also told that he took some of the money for himself or for his own purposes. We're also told in scripture that Jesus knew that Judas would eventually betray him, and he hinted at it more than once. Yet even with that knowledge, Jesus treated Judas with kindness and compassion in the same way that he treated his other disciples. He washed Judas's feet, and he ate with him at the Last Supper. So why did Judas betray Jesus? We don't know for sure, but there's lots of speculation. Perhaps Judas was motivated by greed, and he did it for the 30 pieces of silver. Perhaps there was outside influence. The Gospels do seem to indicate that there was influence from Satan, or that Judas developed an adversarial spirit towards him. Others theorize that Judas's motivation for his betrayal may have something to do with first century Jewish politics. So during the first century, Rome ruled Judea by force. And there were certain groups within first century Judaism that were looking to overthrow Roman rule and establish their king or Messiah in place. In particular, the group known as the Zealots looked to overthrow Rome by force. And there are some scholars that look at the circumstantial evidence around Judas and believe that he was possibly associated with the Zealots. Whether he was or not, it is possible that Judas may have viewed Jesus' teachings and claims to be the Messiah as signs that this long-desired political revolution was coming. And Judas isn't alone in this either. It's clear from the Gospels that the other disciples expected Jesus to usher in a new political kingdom and overthrow Rome's rule of the Jewish people. So, Judas's betrayal could actually be motivated by his belief that Jesus was the Messiah. By brokering a deal with the chief priests who were allied with Rome, Judas could have been trying to force Jesus into revolt, kind of force his hand to claim his role as Messiah and take on the Roman rule. If so, then Judas's betrayal would have been founded in misunderstanding and mistrust of his rabbi. And while we'll never know for sure the motivation behind his betrayal, what we do know is that Judas betrayed his rabbi. But at the same time, let's not forget that Judas wasn't the only disciple to betray his rabbi. Peter also betrayed Jesus. After Jesus' arrest, he was taken to the home of the high priest for questioning, and we're told that Peter follows at a distance and then watches from the courtyard of the high priest's residence. And there in the courtyard, three different times, people identify him as a disciple of Jesus, and each time, Peter flat out denies that Jesus is his rabbi. And that's harsh in today's standards, but in the first century, that denial was a big deal, because a disciple's identity was wrapped up in the association with their rabbi. And it was incredibly shameful and disrespectful to disassociate with your rabbi. It is almost as if saying you wish that your rabbi was dead. And Peter does that three times. So Judas and Peter, two disciples, two betrayals. And while their offenses aren't exactly the same, Judas and Peter share so many parallels. Before their betrayals, Jesus called Judas a devil and he called Peter Satan. Both Judas and Peter betrayed Jesus. And both Judas and Peter ran away from their responsibilities as disciples. And both of them had remorse for their actions. Judas declared that he had sinned by betraying innocent blood, and he tried to return the 30 pieces of silver that he received as payment for his betrayal. And Peter, the moment after he denied Christ and the rooster crowed and he realized what he had done, he bitterly wept. And Jesus was crucified, and both of them found all their hope was gone. Two disciples, two betrayals, yet two different outcomes. Judas hangs himself, and Peter doesn't. If Judas was a zealot, and he truly believed Jesus was the Messiah, and his betrayal was motivated by trying to force Jesus' hand to cause a revolt and bring about a revolution, well, the outcome of Jesus' death must have wrecked Judas. Can you imagine the weight and the guilt, the responsibility that Judas felt that he was the reason that his rabbi is now dead? And I wonder if it's in that loss of hope, the weight of that guilt and the hopelessness that he felt that led him to take his own life. With Peter, we see a little bit different of a story. After Peter's betrayal, the next time we hear of him in the Gospels is when he runs to check out the empty tomb. And then the next mention of Peter in the Gospel of John is Peter declaring that he's going to go fishing. That's significant because Peter has returned to his old way of life, no longer worthy to be a disciple. He goes back to fishing. But then the Gospel of John gives us this beautiful conversation between Jesus and Peter. But John tells us that on the shoreline, over breakfast cooking on the fire, Jesus asks Peter a question. Peter, do you love me? And Peter responds with, yes, you know that I love you. And Jesus says, then feed my sheep. And again, Jesus asks, Peter, do you love me? And Peter once again responds, yes, you know that I love you. And Jesus says, then feed my sheep. And then again, Jesus asks, Peter, do you love me? And Peter responds with, yes, you know that I love you. Three times Jesus asks the question, one for each time that Peter denied him. And then Jesus invites Peter with the same invitation that he gave at the beginning of their time together, follow me. Despite Peter's failure, despite his denial and his betrayal, Jesus doesn't give up on Peter. He doesn't chastise him or even correct him. He doesn't point out how horrible of a mistake he made. He just simply affirms Peter's love for him and then invites him to keep following him. And in the beauty of this conversation and Peter's restoration, I can't help but think about Judas. What could have happened if Judas had just waited a little longer? What would have happened to Judas if he had encountered the resurrected Jesus? Could Judas have had a moment with Jesus just like Peter did? Perhaps the real tragedy of Judas isn't his betrayal, but the guilt and shame and loss of hope that led him to take his own life. These two stories remind us that our failures and our betrayals are not the end of our story. We have a God who gives forgiveness, who has mercy, and extends grace, and it's waiting for each of us to respond. Don't give up on your story, because God hasn't given up on you. We can always choose to trust again. So as we wrap up our time in prayer, I want you to imagine yourself on the shoreline with Jesus. And all of the guilt and shame that you carry for the ways that you have betrayed yourself and the ways you have betrayed God, all those things that weigh on your shoulders that keep you from looking Jesus in the eye, Jesus asks you a simple question. Do you love me? He doesn't call out your sin. He doesn't hold that in front of you. That's been dealt with already. He simply asks, do you love me? What do you say? Wherever you find yourself, whatever mistakes and failures and betrayals weigh heavy on your heart, Jesus looks you in the eye and he says, follow me. His invitation is always open. Jesus did bring about a new kingdom and a new revolution. It just looks differently than we expected. It's better. A kingdom that's marked by forgiveness and grace and love and mercy. Let us walk in that as we follow Jesus.